If society lets cops do house raids, door-to-door searches in migrant communities, then ICE is being allowed to put together a police force that's capable of doing that in the name of border security, in the name of law enforcement, in the name of officially, you know, keeping the nation safe. But the reality is snatch squads and disappearing squads and organizations are ICE is being built up as an organization that is fully capable of, like, absolute across-the-board repression. And the ACLU is trying to get records about planning and implementation, actual records of what's going on and what's happening. We need to learn about ICE. It's a new agency. It's different than the INS. It's under Homeland Security. They don't seem to be interested in being at all transparent or accountable. And so the more information we can get about this agency, the better we can combat it. So that's what I was trying to say. This is an issue for all of us. We all are allies in the fight against snatch squads from the federal government that come into our communities armed to the teeth and grab people based on whatever flimsy excuse they feel the need to provide, if any. So stay tuned. Free Radio Santa Cruz. More information about ICE coming up. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. La Numigra. We will hear more coming to you shortly here on the Indy Newswire. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM and www.freakradio.org. ICE has launched another mass raid in a major U.S. city. Yesterday at around 5 p.m., this is Tuesday, the 15th of July, ICE took 31 people who work for a cleaning contractor as janitors in Rhode Island courthouses. Catch the irony there. According to the Immigrant Solidarity Network, the contractor has been in a fight with members of Fuerza Laboral for refusing to pay wages. And what a coincidence, the workers are attacked by ICE. Fast phone trees brought over 100 people out to support brothers and sisters held prisoner inside the Providence ICE office. People were still outside attempting to block the vans when this was posted in the evening. Attempting to block the vans from transporting compañeros to detention facilities. So for more on this, we are going to be joined in just a moment by Julie on the ACLU from the ACLU. So let's do that now. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM and freakradio.org. This is the Indy Newswire show. And as I mentioned, Julia Hiromi Mass, a staff attorney for the ACLU, joins us on the phone. Can you hear me?
Yes, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for being with us. We are hoping that you're able to talk about ICE activities here locally, as well as the ongoing ongoing attempts to force some kind of transparency, some kind of accountability from this kind of nebulous new agency, the Immigration and Customs Enforcement.
I can. Last year, as you know, early in 2007 and even late in 2006, there were a rash of residential raids that Immigration and Customs Enforcement, also known as ICE, implemented in Northern California and throughout the country. And I think they actually hit Santa Cruz and Monterey counties first in terms of the Northern California raids. And, you know, the stories we heard coming out of those enforcement activities were very troubling. And we can talk a little bit about what happened, how those were conducted. In Santa Cruz, I recently got some statistics about it, that the Immigration and Customs Enforcement always talks about how their priority is targeting people who are a danger to the community, targeting people who have criminal backgrounds. And what we've actually found, both based on the agency's own press releases and information they've given legislators who've asked and because of their concerns about the raids, is that like in 2007, for example, all of the raids in Northern California, over 1,000 people were arrested, but less than a quarter of them actually had criminal histories. And in Northern California, in the first 3 months of last year, less than half of the people that they arrested had any previous order of deportation. So there's just a real disconnect.
Now, the numbers that I had heard actually split the difference. I had heard the average was about 1 in 3 actually had even the flimsiest excuse to actually make some kind of contact or a pickup in terms of a warrant or, you know, out of date paperwork or any kind of deportation order.
Mm-hmm.
So the numbers are even worse in California. And so the local one, though, you were talking about in Santa Cruz County, are you referring to the raids of like August 2006?
I have that there was a 2-day operation September 7th and 8th.
Okay, yeah.
In 2006 in San Benito, Monterey, and Santa Cruz counties. And 106 people were arrested. This is according to information we got from ICE. 106 people were arrested. Only 37 of those 106 people, or 34.9%, had outstanding orders of removal at the time of their arrest. They didn't give us any data on whether any of them had criminal histories.
Okay.
Actually, only 17 of those folks went through removal proceedings. That means got their hearings. And I'm assuming, because they say no one was released, that the rest of them, the, you know, 89 people or 91 people, you know, were deported without a hearing, sounds like. So that really kind of kicked off the raid season in Northern California. And the practices that we heard about that were so troubling were that, just in case your listeners don't know, the general way they were being conducted was early in the morning, a large number of ICE agents would go out with vans to a certain neighborhood, to a certain apartment building, and what we heard anyway from people was that they were knocking door to door, pounding on the doors, demanding that they be opened up. And if they were opened up, they would go inside, round up everyone in the house, search the house, ask for documents, and if they didn't have documents, they'd take them in, book them, suggest that they didn't need a hearing, and a lot of people just were taken out of the country that way. What's troubling about it is that, you know, on the one hand, ICE says that they're targeting criminal fugitives. On the other hand, they actually go out into Latino neighborhoods in such a way that, you know, it seems like they're just targeting a neighborhood based on the fact that brown people live there. And then in terms of the opening, the way they got into the apartments also, they don't have authority to go into anyone's home without consent. And the stories we heard included, you know, that people were being woken up in their beds because someone had left the house early and left the door unlocked and ICE just walked in. Or ICE would come in definitely without consent, handcuff the person if they asked for a warrant. In some cases, those were U.S. citizens or lawful permanent residents that were getting handcuffed when they asked for a warrant. There was a group out of Contra Costa County that filed a complaint that claimed that lawful permanent residents were being told, you have to answer these questions or you're going to lose your status.
Mm.
So there were a lot of really troubling allegations, and on March 6, 2007, the ACLU of Northern California, together with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights and the San Francisco Bay Guardian, filed a Freedom of Information Act request to try to get documents related to the raids so that we could have a better sense of what ICE thought it was doing, get a better sense of how they were targeting the people they were targeting. What were the actual statistics? Were they actually bringing in people with criminal histories, or was it, you know, as it turned out, that the vast majority of these folks were, granted, they were undocumented, but they were here with not posing any particular threat to the community in terms of being involved in any criminal activity or having a criminal history, or even for the majority of them, not having been ordered deported. And I do want to say one thing about those deportation orders. Often they're issued by a judge where the person doesn't come to the hearing because they don't get notice of a hearing. So in some cases, those deportation orders are issued without the person even knowing about it.
So it sounds like from top to bottom, I mean, they're coming in on the basis of racial profiling. They're conducting illegal searches and entry, and that's an absolute abuse of authority and illegal. And then the actual process, I mean, you mentioned some folks are getting hearings, some folks who haven't even been served with deportation orders are then being deported. There's been more information lately about the detention centers and people actually being detained and abused under detention. And then, as you mentioned, some folks are actually deported back. From top to bottom, from beginning to end, this seems to be a process that is...
It's rife with problems in terms of due process and equal protection, you know, principles that are really important to us as Americans and the principles of the Constitution that we sort of hold most dear and feel most proud of are often kind of left behind in the process, it seems. I guess one thing that I'll mention in terms of the process at the end with the hearings and whatnot is that, you know, people are, I actually showed up to try to represent some folks at a recent worksite raid in San Francisco, and they had, you know, the ICE had picked up about 80 people, and they were executing search warrants at a restaurant, and they were criminal search warrants against the owner of the restaurant, but the only folks who got arrested were these 80 workers.
These are the Taqueria raids?
The Taqueria raids, okay. Yeah. And, you know, they came with vans, so it was pretty apparent that they expected to be picking people up. And I went with a group of lawyers down to the San Francisco office where they were booking folks and, you know, signed up to represent people, tried to meet with our clients, and continually were, you know, kept out of the room where they were talking to our clients and just not allowed to see the people that we had signed up to represent at the request of their family members. So there are problems, and one of the things that I discovered and that other people have said has been true for over a year, is that the forms that they have people sign are pre-checked with a box marked that says they're waiving their right to a hearing.
Mm.
And so it's pretty tricky. If the person doesn't understand English, can't read English, and the translation isn't very good. In fact, when I was there, the ICE officer who was showing this form to the person that I was representing said, "Oh yeah, the box is checked, but it doesn't matter. It doesn't really mean anything." And I said, "No, let's cross it out because, you know, let's not have there be any confusion." And I just think that for a lot of people, those kinds of problems add to confusion and just make it really easy for people to waive their rights.
Now, I've heard stories like that. I've heard stories about children being used by officers to basically give information about their parents. Also, agents hanging out at schools and intimidating parents waiting to pick up their children. There are a lot of stories traveling around the community about absolutely abusive, illegal, and plain, flat-out, like, revolting behavior in how these raids are conducted. What kind of documentation, evidence is the ACLU or other organizations working on to demonstrate how illegal these raids are?
Well, we have done a lot of work talking to community members and reaching out to folks to get their stories. There are coalitions, a lot of different advocacy groups and organizations and community groups have been doing this work. I think, you know, ICE has a policy of not going onto school campuses, and we have also heard the stories of them showing up in the neighborhoods and questioning parents on the way to dropping their kids off at school. And it's a little bit hard to verify some of these stories because what happens when a raid hits a community is that people get very scared and they stay inside and they don't answer the door. Excuse me. And it's so it can be hard to verify things. And I repeatedly takes the position that they don't do that, that they're targeting certain apartments or certain workplaces and that they're targeting certain people and that they don't stop people on the street But, you know, we do get community reports if they're in a certain market or that they're at the BART station or that they're parked in front of a school or across the street from a school. And there certainly have been, you know, I can't remember if it was Oakland or Berkeley. I think Oakland. There were reports that ICE vans were parked across the street from some of the schools, and elected officials spoke out about it and objected to it. And that's one thing that I have to give credit to some of the local elected officials around here who've done a fair bit in terms of speaking up against these practices and really posing the questions to ICE. And there have been oversight committee hearings in Congress, and Barbara Lee recently held a town hall in Oakland to talk about these problems and to try to shed light on it. And, oh, just to follow up on your question about information, we have sought through the Freedom of Information Act requests all of this information about the raids from the residential raids last year. We didn't get a response to that FOIA request. We didn't get any responsive documents for a year. We finally filed a lawsuit on June 2nd this year to force the agency to comply with its obligations under federal law to produce these documents that are so important to the public scrutiny of what our government is up to in the light of all these allegations. And just a week after we filed the lawsuit, I finally got a response from ICE, and what it said is that they had identified over 1,000 pages of responsive documents, and then they went on to withhold all but 12 of those pages. And so they turned over 12 pages heavily redacted with big blacked out parts so that some of them don't say anything at all. They're just almost all blacked out.
So the result of the initial request and then a lawsuit to force the request to actually be even addressed was 12 heavily redacted pages?
That's right. Now, we're not done with the lawsuit, so we're going to keep fighting with them and hopefully working with them to get more information so that we can find out how they were targeting the places they targeted, how many people they came in contact with that they actually, you know, had some basis to suspect of something. And hopefully that information will shed light on the practices and give us some basis for calling for specific reforms.
I'm speaking with Julia Hiromi Mass. She's a staff attorney with the ACLU of Northern California, working with a coalition of organizations to force ICE to give some information about the raids, continuing in that struggle in court. You mentioned also that local officials and different agencies have refused to cooperate. Local officials have taken stands against ICE coming into their communities. There's a movement to create amnesty areas, you know, zones and cities that are safe zones, safe spaces. So there's a lot of local resistance to ICE in the, like, you know, discouraging this outside federal agency to come in and conduct these raids.
That's true. I think there's one thing that you mentioned that is a point of some confusion, which is that the sanctuary city movement, the movement to create cities of refuge or counties of refuge, where are really about asking local law enforcement agencies and city governments and county governments not to affirmatively engage in immigration enforcement and not to work with ICE, not to sort of collaborate with ICE. And I just want to make clear that that doesn't mean that ICE can't come into those cities and do their own enforcement activities. They are always going to be able to do that, even if a local city takes a position that they're not going to participate in that enforcement.
Well, that was to a certain extent the my next question. How can agencies actually, is there a legal framework or a structure to actually, once some of this information is out, step up the opposition so that folks are actually able to legally keep this agency out?
I don't think so. I think the strongest, the most successful strategy would be for cities and counties and communities to really work with the federal government and pressure the federal government to reform immigration law and reform the system that is so troubled and broken, that the current federal immigration system, and it is the province of the federal government to enforce immigration law and to make immigration law, and the current system is one in which, you know, somewhere around the number of 12 million people are here without documentation, and they're here. It's harder for them to enforce rights, and there are rights for every person in this country under the Constitution. The Constitution talks about people and not just citizens in many cases. So it's really important that that the system be fixed in such a way that we don't have a huge underclass of people living in the shadows and on the fringes of society not able to enforce their rights, because when one group has fewer rights, it really chips away at the strength of our constitutional rights and civil rights for everyone. And so I think the most effective thing that people can do, or the most meaningful thing people can do, is pass these local resolutions and work with local officials and then also with federal representatives to try to push Congress to do something to fix the problem.
Well, I want to thank you for your work in that vein and in the courts and in the ACLU, trying to get the information we're going to need to continue that fight. Julia Mass is a staff attorney for the ACLU of Northern California and was involved in filing this lawsuit, getting Freedom of Information Act information and documentation statistics from Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
Right on.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Free Radio Santa Cruz, 101.1 FM, www.freakradio.org. This is the Indie Newswire.